7 to 7:40 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us. Nice, bright, sunny day. Good day for a splashdown from the SpaceX Dragon capsule. About three hours ago. Photos and video up on our Facebook page if you want to check that out for yourself. In studio with me now, I have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm always doing well when you're around. You did it again, by the way. I just got to tell you that
we
do our Tuesday interview, and then immediately you have like four news stories on Tuesday in the day. So I'm, what are we going to do about this?
It's not intentional. Yeah, what people don't know is you give me tips. And then we go out there and we make all these cases.
That is so. Anyway, I do see that the FDLE is having a press conference today on what they call Operation Kessel Run. It has to do with using the internet to sexually exploit children today in Pensacola. This is an operation involving everybody, but they do this periodically, and every time you do it, you catch people. Every time you catch,
sadly, that is the case. We have a pretty robust operation, ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children. We're always constantly doing that, and this was a multi-jurisdictional. That's all I'll say about it because I don't want to.
Sure, obviously they're going to have a
press conference. Yeah.
I do like the, I do appreciate the Star Wars reference to the Kessel Run. The smuggling is kind of the idea in the Millennium Falcon, although I don't know that I want to name an operation that catches them. Anyway, that's too far afield for us.
I didn't name it.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
Get off my back, man.
before we get into the kind of the big instance of the last week, I do want to say I happened to be driving on US 29 a week or two ago, and now that the new ordinance about not standing in the median is in place,
right.
I did happen to see one of your deputies that had gotten out with somebody who was standing in the median on US 29,
right.
And I thought, hey, look, enforcement.
Well, I've been saying for a long time, if there were enforceable ordinances or enforceable laws, then we would enforce those. But in the past, there have been the ordinances or laws that are under constitutional review. And knowing that, it's difficult for us to go out there and put our deputies in that position and put our agency in that position, quite frankly. But when the county commission approved the ordinance that does not allow you to stand in medians under 6 foot, 6 foot and under, we intended to enforce it, and we have been enforcing that. It requires a warning and two light cycles and that sort of thing. So we've been doing that, understandably. But our hope is that ultimately people will stop standing in that median.
Is if people see it, right? I mean, I know for a lot of there are a lot of infractions that I think people feel reluctant to call in because they feel like it doesn't quite rise to the level of like a 911 or even the non-emergency number, or they don't want to be a pest, or I don't know. But if people see somebody standing in the median in violation, do you want their help? Do you want the report?
Yeah, if they can let us know, because a lot of times people will pick a corner, they'll pick a location, and they'll be there repeatedly.
Right.
So even if you know, it wouldn't be the highest priority call that we get. I mean, right. We're not going to stop and deviate from a domestic violence type call to go to it. But if when they have time, they'll go through there and they'll get out. And as you said, or as you saw, we'll get out there and talk to them and explain to them that there's a law against this. So don't do it.
And I presume that's a call, the non-emergency number, not a 911 call?
Yeah, I would think it's, I mean, unless you're in traffic or someone's life's in danger, it's not a 911 call.
Which is, by the way, everywhere I've lived, I always program into my phone police, sheriff, police, which is not 911, but it's the non-emergency number for PPD or Santa Rosa County Sheriff or whatever, because that way you can call those numbers if something comes up, because it's useful.
Right, yeah. And if you just let us know where they're doing this, then again, we'll have deputies go out there when they're in between calls, and they can hopefully alleviate it.
You announced last week that you have found some more information and managed to, very good technology use, found enough evidence of a fingerprint in a blood sample from a cold case from, 30 years ago, that you're able to find the person that you think killed Stephen Davis.
Yeah, I got to take you back. 1998, we had a cab driver was taking a break. And then he ended up getting shot a single time, or actually got shot, I think, a couple of times. And that case has been on standby. It's been on hold. There were pieces of information. There was a vague video surveillance showed a guy in a red shirt. There was a bloody smudge. I couldn't even call it a fingerprint because they couldn't determine the ridge and the details that were required for a fingerprint. But they could tell the blood type, but they couldn't match it to an individual. We attached that to the victim's blood. But we couldn't attach the fingerprint to the suspect. So obviously, when you have a bloody fingerprint, that's a pretty good clue, right? But we didn't have the technology at the time to figure out who that was, and we had a number of suspects, and they eliminated all of them. So they had no idea who did this. And by they, I mean the investigators back, 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. But then with new technology, the sheriff's office before my time had resubmitted that fingerprint to try to get it evaluated again. And then a couple years later, they reevaluated, submitted it again. And now we sent some of our crime scene people and our investigators to this training where they can better get pull that ridge detail that's necessary. And there's also some with the computerized technology and photography now, you can get a little better with that. So lo and behold, they submitted it again. This time it came back with the individual that it popped up on
who's already incarcerated elsewhere in Florida
for some very serious crimes. He wasn't going to get out for a number of years, but there's some closure for the family.
Right.
I had the opportunity to meet with two of the sisters, and one of their main comments was, man, I wish my mother could have seen to live to see justice, could have lived to see, the answers, what, why. And it was just a purely random act. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to it, there were some other things that put this gentleman at the scene, killer at the scene.
Yeah.
And so again, we tie all that together, working pretty well with the state attorney's office. And then we got a warrant signed, and obviously we served it on them, and he'll come up here to answer for the charges. Now, I think he's dead set to get out like in 2027 or something like that. Hopefully, this will keep him in there forever.
Well, and two things that I think are a credit to your agency that show in this case. Number one is that you've been engaged in these cold case symposiums, so you're really very actively coming back and coming back and coming back to these cases that remain unsolved, these homicides, which you never give up on homicides. And then number two is that you mentioned it that you had sent your folks to a training,
right.
Sharpen the sword kind of stuff. And they brought back with them knowledge gained at the training that allowed them to go back and apply new techniques to this cold case information and produce, a charge against somebody because of that. And both of those components, I think, are important in this case. So, credit to your agency, credit to your leadership for doing that. If you had another comment that you wanted to make about the cold case solution.
Yeah, you mentioned the cold case symposium, which we've had a couple already. And I think it's important to kind of note that what I wanted to do is gather experienced investigators from other areas. And one of those investigators was Ted Chamberlain, who I work with at Pensacola Police Department. Ted Chamberlain is probably noted more for being the investigator with the Jody Buoniano murder, the Black Widow. He wrote a book, written about it and all that stuff. So we had the opportunity to bring him in, and he's the one that said, hey, I was looking at this case right here. I think if you resubmit it with the latest technology, why don't we do that again? Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't have done that, but because we have a list of all these cases that we're going to resubmit when the technology comes around. But he said, why don't we put this one at the front of the list, because there's a possibility here. And that's why I had him present at the press conference, and he was also present when we talked to the family, talked to the sister.
That's
so
great.
This is a pretty good
great
opportunity for us.
We also did have an incident. We had a man discovered fatality with a gunshot wound on our street, and this was in, the home or the building is pending demolition for code enforcement too, or something. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I know we've had 14 calls to there in the last 3 months. Disturbances, EMS calls, just a number of different variety of different calls. So we're familiar with the address. This case, we got a call. We actually got a call about 3:30. A shot spotter indication showed that there was a single shot in that area. So our deputies arrived, as we do.
So this
around.
Was a shot spotter.
There was a shot spotter.
Okay.
A couple hours earlier, but we couldn't see anything. We couldn't find anyone. We knocked on doors, couldn't find anything, which happens way more than there's actually someone shot. The overwhelming majority of the time, it's a shot spotter. We get there, and the thought is that someone's shooting in the air, someone's shooting in the ground, target practice, that sort of thing. So in this case, we get there, we couldn't find anything. Well, 4 hours later, allegedly, some of the friends go inside. There's a motorhome parked in front of this lot. And then they get there and they find out this person, they think he's had an overdose. They call EMS. EMS gets there, discover a bullet wound. Then we get the call. So now we're working it, obviously, as a homicide. That's all I can tell you right now. We've got some leads that they're running down. But we are asking if anyone has information to let us know.
Okay. And that's so the EMS discovered that he had been shot. But then,
right.
All the pieces of the puzzle, then you would, for example, you call the medical examiner would come right. and confirm that was the likely cause of death and or do an autopsy if they're not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to look at the
at a
body and determine, what could have contributed.
Right.
But yes, ultimately, the medical examiner's office is called. They send their investigators out there, and then they handle the autopsy part of it. And then the medical examiner will let us know the cause of death. Because, again, you got a what appears to be a gunshot wound. You know, you have to find, you know, if there's a bullet projectile still left in the body, and an exit wound, all that kind of stuff is helpful for us, the trajectory, all that stuff. But then you never know what else there might have been. You know, strangulation might have been some other cause of or contributing cause of death.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about is I know it hasn't been signed by the governor yet, but the ordinance for camping that would give you the ability to remove somebody from, say, a park or a sidewalk or something like that, or private property, of course. But also, if there's a place to move them to, if there is a publicly designated area that has, there's a bunch of parameters on this for camping. Scambia, again, it hasn't been signed yet, but have you guys had any conversations with the county about this yet? You know, they're probably waiting for it to get signed, but have you had any conversations or, you know, anticipation of how this might look when you're actually involved in the enforcement of this ordinance?
We haven't sat down with it. I mean, as you know, these things are amended up until the last moment.
They really are.
That they're approved. So that was just, last week,
yep.
I guess, it ended up. But we haven't had a conversation with them. I mentioned earlier that we were enforcing the ordinance that they already passed.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that we intend to enforce this ordinance as well, and working with the county as much as we possibly can. I've been pushing a long time for this dashboard to kind of let our deputies know where, so when we get out with somebody, we can say, hey, it looks like there's room in the rescue mission or this other mission or other home. And so that we can all work together on these things so that whatever actions the county ends up taking, we're consistent. It's consistent with the law, obviously. And, it's that balancing act. You know, you have to balance the law with humanity, no one's going to starve on my watch type of thing. But I'm convinced that the people that are out there are not starving if they don't want to be, to be hungry, I should say. But I have a heart, but I will tell you that if there's an ordinance or there's a state law that will allow us to remove them from the public areas, then we will enforce that. And my hope is that that's our job. Our job is to enforce state law. Other people decide, how many homes, what type of shelters that they have.
Right.
And, my expectation is that they will get on that so that we can have some sort of resolution to this homeless situation.
Fair to say that if this law gets passed and if the county provides the facility that's required by the law for it to be enforced, that it would be – you would find it useful to actually have a place that you could always take people to if you're going to trespass them off of public or private lands because they're camping. That would be useful.
Absolutely. I get complaints and calls every day, and I feel for the residents, and I feel for business mm-hmm. owners, and I see that. I also feel for people that may be hungry. I understand there's a mental health issue that needs to be resolved. Again, that's not the sheriff's office responsibility. The sheriff's office responsibility is to enforce the laws. And if there's a law, we will enforce it.
Sheriff Chip Simmons, the Scambia County Sheriff, thank you as always for keeping us safe, providing for the public safety, and for spending some time with us every week. I appreciate it.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Jake.